Hey, y'all. This is Heaving Bosoms, the podcast where two best friends recap romance novels while giggling and opining about first kiss best practices. HBs, welcome back for part two of Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert. Don't forget that this Friday, December 13th, we're having our Patreon watch party at 8 p.m. Eastern. I, for one, cannot wait for the shenanigans. Okay, when we left off, Red had agreed to help Chloe with her list, and there was an almost kiss moment. Here we go.
Also, one of my favorite things is this quote. What did it mean when a man you made deals with and sent slightly flirtatious emails to licked your ear and held your hand? What did it mean?
What did it mean?
I felt very seen as, like, we know what that means, but also, like, we can't accept what that means.
Well, and I can't guarantee it for darn sure, yeah. You know?
God, it's so fucking true, too. So she is in the midst of all of this. Having to give Smudge back. She finds out that Smudge does have an owner who she can't hope.
Is in Mallorca.
Is a terrible owner who just doesn't give a shit about her little aminal.
So she finds out the day that they're going to go like out and do her drinking list item that she has to give Smudge back. And so he, when he gets to her door to pick her up, she's like still in a robe. And she's holding Smudge, and she had emailed him, like, found out Smudge owner, need to return, period, for goods, Chloe. And so he was like, obviously, she's having some really big feelings about this. But he's in a really tough situation here, though, because she just hands the cat to him and then walks to her bedroom in the shortest silk robe he's ever seen in his life.
Doesn't properly close the bedroom?
And he was already like wanking over her ankles, all right? And now like she's shown him a bit of thigh. What is he to do? Mm-hmm. Anyway, she gets ready and he takes her to like some uns clubs. Mm-hmm. And it's like going fine, but she's like, why didn't I think about bringing earplugs?
She also realizes that she wasn't actually nostalgic for the club, which was super bad. Like she realizes she was just nostalgic for her
friends, company,
like the experience of being out and doing a fun thing with a friend and all of these things. And then she looks at him and she's like, I don't want to be here. Show me something you like to do. What do you like to do? And he's like, okay.
And so I don't know if you're gonna really like this. And she's like, why? Is it because it's too depraved and kinky? He's like, nope, because it's boring.
Yeah.
So they go and he's like thinking about how wonderful she is, essentially. And then all of a sudden she goes, let me guess, we're here. And he sort of comes out of this mental fog and he's like, oh, yeah, we are. Because there's a bunch of art standing in an alleyway. And it says like any other part of town, it would probably be like a scary situation. Well, without like the art that has twinkle lights on the easels. But because it's here, it's just like edgy and posh or whatever. So they end up going inside. And on the first floor, there's this like ridiculous chair installation art piece. And
don't sit on me. I'm famous.
Yeah. And so she goes, oh, reminds me of my grandmother Gigi. And he's like, really? She's like, yes, darling. Don't you know? This is Madame Chair. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay. Every other time I've been in this situation, I was never let in on the joke, but I feel like Chloe is going to bring me in on the joke. And so they start bantering about this chair, and then they go upstairs, And they start getting side-eyed by the other attendees real hard because she's a Black woman. She's bigger. She is like, she's dressed for the club. And then he is this like rough around the edges, long haired ginger
tattoos
guy in like a
everywhere.
Leather jacket, mm-hmm. tattoos all over the like hand tattoos and stuff.
Yeah.
Granted, they say mum, but you know, from a distance, you don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They get... He has visible ink, which
is not
acceptable in this posh establishment.
Yeah.
So one of the guys does literally go find the owner, Julian, of the art gallery, and he's like, you need to get rid of these riffraff. And so Julian shows up, and he's like, Redford Morgan, long time no see, buddy. Because turns out Redford used to show his art here.
And this was the gallery that he grew up next to.
Yep.
And so he learned about art and the art industry and the way things work from this guy, Julian's dad, who owned it before him. And she asked him when he knew he wanted to do this. And he says that it was a trip when they were 9. He almost didn't get to go, but his grandfather scrounged up the money to get him there. And he was just like absolutely enamored. And then he would just come to this art gallery and like hang out and look around and observe. And at one point, the owner comes over and asks if he has any questions and sort of becomes like a de facto mentor kind of situation. So Julian's like, hey, I haven't heard from like where you've been. And Red's like, I mean, staying away from you, you know. And so they're joking back and forth. But then finally he's like, hey, take my card. I would love for you to call me. And Red's like, yeah, I'll absolutely call you. And then Julian stops him and he's like, it does not have to be about work. I just want to know how you are. And Red's like, okay, all right, I'll call you. And oh, it's just the best.
We have a little conversation between them about their future dream to visit New York City. Their separate dreams. Right?
Yeah.
He wants to go see the Museum of Modern Art. She just wants to go to New York to see New York. They're like, this is when she finds out the whole history of his ex.
No. He says, well, I've been to New York. I just wasn't able to go to the museum. And then she's like, what? How can you go all the way there and then not go? And he's like, well, I went with my ex and we just didn't get around to it.
Oh my God. But then at one point he tells her, you know, I used to think you were a snob, but when it comes to this stuff, you're just oblivious, aren't you? And she says, you thought, what?
What?
Gasp, etc. I can't believe you thought I was a snob. Neither can I. You're just a cute little hermit who hisses at sunlight.
Oh. But then she looks at him and she's like, Red, you know, I'm not completely oblivious. You know, I am Black. And he's like, what? Don't scare me like that. I came out of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, no. She says that when you have more than one marginality, is that what it's called, I think?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. If you're marginalized in more than one way, like you sort of have to turn your brain off to certain microaggressions. And like, this is one of them that she chooses just to have go off a duck's back or whatever. And I don't know. It was this date was so incredible. Talia Hibbert, So now they go for a walkabout.
Mm-hmm. They're on a walkabout. This is when she admits to him that she's been spying on him through the window. And he says,
for that, though, because he says, do you want to go, like, sit down? Because it's from his perspective, and he says, like, I know she's been standing for a long time. We've walked quite a bit, and I don't know exactly what it is, but I want to talk for a while, and it would probably be more comfortable if we sat. And so he's like, do you want to sit by that monument over there? And she's like, what? Red? And he goes, oh, shoot, I forgot you were classy as fuck. And he's, like, not even kidding about it. And she goes, no, I got over sitting on the ground a little while into my illness. I just, like, you really don't mind? And he is devastated and so mad at all the people who have been in her life before who made her believe that sitting down with a friend is, like, a hardship. Yeah, instead of just something you do for friends. Ugh. So, yes, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. So this is when she reveals to him that she's been spying on him through the wet. She's like, Brad, I have to confess that I've been doing something bad. And he's like, well, here it is. And she tells him and he's like, yeah.
No, before that, he says, why? And it says that he says it like the world depends on the answer, because it mm-hmm. did. And so he's thinking to himself, like, her answer is going to basically boil down to me being an animal in a zoo and, you know, all the gross things. But she says that you just look so vital when you paint, and watching you is like vicariously coming alive. And he
says,
yes,
going to ask you something. I'm going to ask you, and I don't want you to worry about anything. Not mm-hmm. a fucking thing, Chloe. I'm so sorry. So sorry. Not a fucking thing, Chloe. Because Chloe. He has started using a diminutive. And she clocks it. She's like, interesting, interesting, interesting.
Mm.
And he says, we're friends. This doesn't have to be complicated. I'm not going to make it complicated. Okay? And she says,
lie.
Okay. Ask.
Sorry.
And he says, should I make you moan again? And she says, please. Y'all, we get a finger bang on a monument step.
Wait, and like public service announcement really quickly, okay? Because like one of the things that reminded me of this was actually the film Hot Frosty. That scene in which, I'm sorry, listen, just go with me for a minute. God damn it.
Stop.
Give me some credit here, Sabrina. The scene where he asks Ed, the deputy, like, how do you know if a girl wants to kiss you? And they go through that whole conversation where like Ed tells him there's like a lean in and like there will be a look on her face or whatever. And I don't know if it's because I watch so much reality dating TV, mm-hmm. but like, I feel like this is a lost art. Like, you know, giving people hints and then like having them go the 90 and then the 10%, you know, towards each other and like all of that. I feel like it's a lost art because people either out of fucking nowhere will say, can I kiss you? And it ends up 90% of the time being awkward instead of wonderful and cute like it is in romance books. Mm-hmm. Or they just do a hard lunge at your face, you know?
Yeah, like where's the like the longing look and like maybe like a little bit of a cradle and a, I'd really like to kiss you.
Yeah, but now the elevated PSA, okay, this is, listen, this is admittedly high level stuff, all right? But the elevated PSA is like, why say, can I kiss you? When you can say, should I make you moan again?
Should I make you not can I?
No, should I?
And then, oh my God, and his dirty talk at one point. So they're she's sitting between his legs and he's like, he's got his hand up her dress.
On her thigh. And, on her thigh. And he's like, you wouldn't even let me finger you in public, would you? You're too classy. And she lies and she says, no, of course not.
At one point he says to her, I want to make you cry. I bet you get like that, don't you? When it's too much, when it feels too good. And then they're just like, they played the game. I want. Yeah. He's like, I want to run my hand up your thigh.
This is the best part because he says, we're going to play a game called I Want. And then out of nowhere, she says, like, I want to rub my skin against yours just to see what it feels like. And then she's like, I want to see your cock is the next thing she says. And he says, oh, you're good at this. All right, my turn.
It's great. He makes her come. It's fantastic. And then, oh my God. And then she's like, Red, I don't suppose, I mean, obviously you haven't. And if you, and he says, Chloe, love, please don't say you'll finish me off. I'm trying really hard not to fuck you in a back alley here.
Oh my God.
And then it all comes crashing down. Yep.
I was listening to this. Normally, I'm a monster, and if I'm in a good ADHD headspace, I can listen to an audiobook while talking to my kids and like doing all the other stuff. But during this scene, I was so horrified as it was happening that like my children were talking to me, and I would just say like, "Oh no." And they'd be like, "What's the matter, Mom? What do you mean? Oh no." I'm like, "That had nothing to do with whatever you just said to me. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And I had to pause the scene to like, you know,
interact
give them with my full attention.
Yeah.
Because I like chills all over my body, my stomach falling out of my butt.
So, listener, what happens is her Aunt Mary shows up, and she's out for the night with her friend, and she...
Which, like, goals. I want to be a 62-year-old woman walking around in stilettos and purple fucking lipstick, drunk as fuck on gin.
Yeah.
Why don't I do that now? Damn it.
I mean, you could. You can't.
I really couldn't.
That's the thing,
I really
you can't.
I tried on some of my stilettos the other day, and I am not this. I don't have the same feet.
I'm not that person anymore. I can do one or the other. It's either stilettos or it's gin, right?
Yeah,
I
would have to train for an evening like this for a while.
You know what? I will be there to hold you up, okay?
Thank
Me and
you.
My mocktails will be there to keep you and your stiletto. Gin-soaked, stiletto-wearing self.
Yeah.
From falling.
Having the ankles of a baby deer.
My God, yeah. So, it's awkward. It's super awkward because she ends up introducing Red as her superintendent and basically avoids revealing that, like, they even know each other.
Well, and from her perspective, she's thinking... My Aunt Mary is the most that's ever existed on the planet.
Yes.
Like, and if I give her any hint that like Red is anything else than like a professional contact, it'll immediately go through the entire grapevine of the family. Mm-hmm. And like, it'll become so much that like this fledgling, whatever this is, because she's also freaking out because she's realizing that like when she was a horny monster. Yeah, when she was a horny monster, she could say to herself, yeah, I won't make this complicated at all. But now that she's come and she's coming down a little bit, she's like, oh, God,
it's complicated.
What does it mean? Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, it's complicated.
So, yeah, she's trying to, like, save him a little bit. But from my perspective and his perspective, all he sees is her being like, this low-class person is not actually a friend of mine.
Well, and it gets so much worse.
Oh.
Because she's explaining to all this stuff to Aunt Mary, and then Aunt Mary leaves, right? Aunt Mary's gone. And she says, I mean, you're my bad boy tutor, she quipped. Ridiculous. She was being ridiculous. He would hate that. His smile tightened. I wouldn't say I'm services included, but not limited to illicit orgasms.
Oh my God.
Services? Why did she say that? Why did she say that? He looked like she just punched him in the stomach.
Yeah.
But for only a second. Right. Yeah. And then.
All right, Chloe.
She says, oh, Red, I didn't mean. And he says, no. And I loved him for this. I loved him for not letting her get away with it. Mm-hmm. Because she said, he's like, no, don't take it back now. He said calmly, you're already confusing the fuck out of me. I'm sorry. And I'm pissed. Good talk.
Yeah.
So they end up getting back to the flats and he walks her to her door and then leaves. Like he
and
doesn't
Chloe
want to hear-
says zero words the entire time. She's sitting there thinking like, I need to apologize. I need to explain. I need to blah, blah, blah. But she's just like frozen.
Yes. So it's one of those things where he is aware. As this is all happening, he's aware that this is a trauma response because of his past with
Yes. Bella.
He's like, I can rationally sit here and acknowledge that Chloe made a mistake. Chloe apologized. Chloe did not mean it that way.
And Chloe is different.
Yes. But I functionally, yes, that is not what happened.
Yes.
I think I need therapy. My friends have been saying I need therapy for a while, like, or I should go to therapy for my past. This is the turning point, right? Like, being able to acknowledge that this is not what's happening, but I cannot functionally, like, importantly,
in my body, that's not what happened.
Exactly. And so, meanwhile, Chloe is like, oh my God, I was an asshole.
Everything.
I'm going to give him space. I'm just going to leave him alone. And
she sent him a text message the next morning apologizing. Mm-hmm. And it says that, like, he didn't know how to respond. And so he didn't. And so she's so worried that she's, like, wrecked everything. But she has to give him space. This can't be about her.
So while giving him space, she has to take Smudge back. And she thinks about how if I hadn't fucked up with Red, basically, he would be here to support her through this. But unfortunately, she is having to give him space. And this is when she meets Annie, the Knitter Whisperer.
Obsessed.
Love her. So we find this out later, but Knitter Whisperer, I'm sure you're asking the questions we all were, is she sells lingerie. She's a lingerie person.
She's a lingerie designer.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And boy, she is not okay after returning Smudge. She's having a flare up. She is sad and she's devastated. And it's still rough.
Feels so guilty about Red. Mm-hmm. And so he ends up knocking on her door and she opens it and she's like, hi. And he's like, just to be clear, I'm still pissed at you. And she's like, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. He's like, and I'm going to be pissed at you until I feel like I don't need to be anymore. And she's like, okay. And it says, like, she didn't understand why he was explaining the function of human anger. But, like, it seemed important, so she let him go.
Yeah.
And then he looks at her and he's like, you're sick. And she's like, no, no, no. And she's like, meh. And he's like, go in, sit down. What have you eaten today? And she's like, nothing, really. Mm-hmm. Like, and so then he's like, I'm going to cook you dinner then. Mm-hmm. And she's falling over herself being like, Red, no, no, you cannot cook me dinner. And he goes and he sits down next to her and he's like, hey, it's something I like doing. It's something that you need doing. And so that's what I'm going to do. And then she looks at him and she grabs his hands and she says, Red, I'm so sorry for the other night. I'm so hugely sorry. It was the wrong thing to say. I did not communicate the right things with you. And they're like, she says exactly what needs to be said. And so afterwards, he looks at her and he's like, you're really good at apologies, Button. You really know how to apologize. Because she takes full responsibility, acknowledges her fuck up, acknowledges that she knows how it made him feel. Mm-hmm. And then leaves
but
it
also,
at that.
There's no expectation that he's just immediately okay, which is the most important part.
Yeah.
So she ends up being a sleepy little baby on the couch after eating, after being full of food and tea. And so he carries her to bed and tucks her in. And then she grabs onto him and she's like, no, don't go. You smell like sleep.
You smell like sleep is one of the cutest, most relatable things that has ever been sleepily said.
Yep, exactly. And she's like, please don't go. And he's like, okay. So he ends up laying down next to her and falls asleep as well.
Uh-huh. And then he wakes up with Chloe Brown in a towel just out of the shower. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, hey, hey. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that morning, she makes him breakfast and it's a whole thing. And then she's confessing, basically, like, I'm afraid of getting hurt, okay? This is their big feeling confession moment. Because he's like, I'm into you. And she's like, I'm into you too. And he tells her that prioritizing emotional safety is not cowardice.
Yeah.
Which is really beautiful. And it's exactly what Chloe needed to hear in that moment.
Yeah. And then isn't this where he says, you really don't know what I want from you, do you, Chloe?
Uh-huh.
And she's like, no, I don't think so. And then later on, he says something similar. And she thinks to herself, maybe she does. But, like, it's so scary.
Because from his point of view, all he wants, he doesn't, it's not that he wants to fuck her. It's not that he wants to do all of those things. He just wants her to be happy.
He just wants to make her happy. Oh my God. Well, yeah, I think that comes up because she tells him, as part of the apology was her telling him that in that moment she was freaking out because she didn't know how to not make it complicated. And
yes,
like it was, that was her major freak out. And that's when he says, "You really don't know what I want from you, do you, Chloe?" So now they're going camping.
Whoa.
Okay, but we are an hour and a half in, so I'm wondering if we might be able to go camping.
We can. But really, really importantly.
No, you're fine. Yeah.
They make out.
Yes.
And they're hard making out. And then he pulls back because he needs to slow down. Otherwise, he's coming in his pants. And he tells her to slow down. But she stops and she gets really self-conscious and she like steps away from him. And like he grabs onto her and like drags her back into his arms. And he says, "Don't do that. This is your spot now."
With her head in the crook of his neck. "This is your spot now."
Yeah. And then he does take her to her bedroom and finger bangs her because orgasms help with pain.
Oh my God. Well, no, because he says, "Chloe, when I said slow down, I didn't mean stop and go away. I meant slow down so I don't go off too soon."
Pants.
Yeah. And then, yeah, he goes down on her like a champion.
Uh-huh.
And it is fantastic.
And now it's camping time.
And now we're camping. Yeah, now it's time to camp. And he comes over to her house with like two giant duffel bags. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Did you bring bug spray?" And he's like, "No, I have so many more important things to bring. What are you talking about?" And she's like, "What is more important than bug spray?" And he pulls out the biggest package of marshmallows she's ever seen in her life.
Honestly,
how dare you?
Adorable. Red, and I
stop being so sexy.
My God, Red is so sexy. So they're out and about and it's so touching to her because they get to the campsite. And he specifically picks a spot that is easy to get to from the car because he knows that she'll probably be a little tired. And she didn't even have to ask. She didn't have to bring up anything.
She didn't have to point it out. And it wasn't like a sacrifice that he made.
It wasn't a big deal.
It was just the way that they were doing it.
So they're playing 21 little...
They're roasting marshmallows.
Yeah, and roasting little marshmallows and playing 21 questions and learning a little bit about each other. And he shares about his childhood. She's talking about her first kiss. And then it's on.
Yeah. No, importantly, no. I'm so sorry. We have to slow down because okay. She says, "I want to ask you a question that's not about the game. And that is what happened to you in London?"
Yes.
And so Red says that when he went to London, the way that he broke into the art scene was this lady named Pippa, and they started dating, and he started getting into shows and things like that. And he says everything was wonderful and perfect except for Pippa because she was abusive. Mm-hmm. And Chloe's like, "What? What are you talking about?" And he says, "She was abusive. Like, I didn't see it at first because she's so tiny, and like, so it didn't hurt when she hit me. And I thought that she was just, you know, feisty instead of verbally and mentally abusive. I didn't realize there was an emotional manipulation and all the business happening." And then she started trying to get me to stop visiting my mom because my mom didn't like her. They met one time, and hearing my mom say, like, "She's not treating you right," made it a little bit harder for Pippa to talk him out of the fact that she wasn't treating him right every time that they had a kerfuffle. And so finally he stood up to her and he said, no, "I'm going to go visit my mom." And then she stabbed him in the hand with a fork. And he shows her like these scars, and bless him, it's on his right hand, and he goes, "Lucky I'm a lefty." And like, oh my God. And so Chloe, her blood is boiling.
Oh yeah. She's about to get in that car and go find Pippa and stab her. with a fork.
She says, oh, this is what murderous intent feels like. And then she says, hey, Red, you say so many lovely things to me. Do you ever say them to yourself? And he says, no. And he thinks to himself, I didn't even think to do it before, like, therapy. And then she says, all right, I'm going to make some more things clear. And she tells him that he's smart and he's funny and he's so talented. And Pippa didn't make him. Pippa discovered him before anyone else, and that was smart of her. But then she abused that. And, yeah, like, she didn't make you. You are still, yeah, just as talented. And he says, like, Pippa isn't even really the most traumatizing thing about thinking about London and art. The thing that traumatized him the most is that he gave in to her intellectual and emotional abuse. He let her win by pulling all of his art out of things, yeah, and believing her when she said that he was nothing without her and then disappearing. He's like, I abandoned so many friends and so many contacts, and then I didn't paint for a really long time. And she says, like, that wasn't a fuck up. That was you cleansing with fire.
Yeah.
And you can fix that.
It was just a, like, result with Julian, of being hurt and reacting to an unhealthy situation. It's not a personal failing.
Yes.
He tells her, he's like, well, I did start to go to therapy over it all. And she says, Gigi does say that therapy is the most important medical service there is. Oh, yeah, really? He asked dryly. So it's just fuck antibiotics, huh?
Oh. And now it is on, TM.
It is.
Because they go into that tent.
He set up fairy lights.
There's an air mattress and fairy lights all in the inside of this tent.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, wowza. He says to her, are you going to let me slide into this pretty pussy tonight, Chloe?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And she says, yes, please.
And he is, like, foreplay king. Touching, yeah, on, kissing on. And then she says to him, Chloe Brown, you are all of us.
Mm-hmm.
She says, not to ruin this very romantic moment, but would you possibly consider fucking me now? And he says, I've already considered it frequently. And she says, in that case, would you hurry up and do it?
And he's like, he says, you're so greedy.
Demanding, aren't, ooh, you? And then he does fuck her. He fucks her, wow, real good. And then when they're both naked at one point, he looks at her and he's like, hey, Chloe.
Yeah.
I have an idea. Just a suggestion. Have you, I think you should consider just being naked. All the time, actually.
All the time. I think just all the time.
Just always. Just think about it. Okay.
Consider it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, oh my God. And then she tells him, she says, because they haven't actually, like, fucked yet. He's just been finger fucking her up until this point and, like, going down on her and touching her. And, yeah, she says, well, Red, you made me come. So if you're a man of your word, you will now fuck me into oblivion. He almost choked on his own tongue. Into oblivion, huh? That's what I said. Get on with it. Well, that was him told.
Yeah, that was him told.
And then he does. He fucks her right into oblivion. They both go to sleep and snuggle up.
He says, Chloe, do me a favor. If you can't sleep tonight, wake me up. But she was already asleep on him.
Yeah. And they're both so happy. They're so, yeah, pleased. And then they get back to her house and it all falls apart again.
Wow.
Boy. So this is important. We didn't talk about this. She has amended her list. Okay. Her sisters have been giving her shit about Red for weeks, months, however long. And she has amended her list to keep Red.
Yeah. She crossed out meaningless sex and she put on there keep Red.
Yes.
Meanwhile, from the beginning of the book, we found out that Danny and Eve have a friendly bet going on. And Danny said that she wouldn't be able to cross off camping or meaningless sex. So they are splayed out naked. Red's clothes are, like, in the washing machine. And they hear this, like, they hear the sisters come into the flat and be like, Chloe, like, we are here because you've been ignoring us. And she looks at him and she's like, oh my God, it's my sisters. Do you want to come? And he's like, Chloe, I'm so naked. And he realizes that, like, this is her making sure he knows that this is different than the way it was with her aunt. Like, she is not ashamed of him. She wants him to come out and meet them. It's up to him. And so he's like, don't worry about it. And she's like, okay, well, then be quiet. And he's like, oh my God, she's going to just pretend like I'm not here. That's so cute. But he can overhear their whole conversation. And so as they're talking about this, they're like camping. Like, it's not even your fibro. We're worried just because none of us are meant for the outdoors.
Like, well, and then her sisters are like, oh my God, you're crossing off multiple things because men's clothes are here. You crossing off meaningless sex. And Chloe tells them, well, I got rid of that and replaced it with red. And he hears her say that. And he immediately goes to, oh my God.
He gets triggered.
He's using me.
Yeah.
This whole thing was just to cross shit off of her list. I'm the meaningless sex.
Or, like, I am the entity that she can cross off her list. Like, it's not even necessary. First, he's worried that he's meaningless sex. And then when she says she replaced that with him, he's like, oh no, I'm just something to cross off her list. And so he has a complete PTSD response. He's outside of his body. He's looking off into the middle distance. He cannot handle anything. And so when Chloe finally gets rid of them and comes into the room, she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And then she notices that he's a statue and she's like, Red, what's going on? And he says, he's basically like, so I'm on your list, huh? And she's like,
he's too upset right now to listen. He can't hear what she's saying. And like, that's valid.
And but, she knows it. She sees it in that moment.
But then, as he's about to leave the flat, she says to him, if you can leave this, because that's, so like, he just got triggered. Her trigger is being left.
Is being abandoned.
Yeah. And so she says to him, if you can leave this easily, don't fucking come back. And she's thinking, like, she's aware of it. She, in her head, she's like, he was afraid. I know this.
And she's like, if I can just explain it, I will get the list and I will show him. And meanwhile, she's like looking for the notebook and he says, oh, yeah, you're going to look for some evidence and then you won't be able to find it. But like, you know, it's there. And so like, it's just, I'm just stupid. Right. And she's like, no, you don't understand. And he says, don't fucking tell me I can't understand. And he like yells.
Yeah.
And they're both really surprised about the fact that he yelled. And then he leaves.
So the minute he's outside of the flat, too, the minute that door shuts and he's no longer in the situation, he has like this level of clarity and he immediately regrets the way that all went down. And so he knocks on the door and he's like, Chloe.
And she's snurfling inside. She's like, yeah, what do you want?
Please, can we talk? And he tells her, I don't know what happened. No, I do. I do. I do know what happened. I fucked up. I'm sorry. I panicked and I couldn't think. And she says, I know. I know, Red, and I understand. I really do, but I don't think we should see each other anymore. And he's like, please give me a chance.
I can be better.
And she says, it's not because of you. It's me.
Yeah.
I can't do this because we're only human and I'll stumble or you will and it'll hurt just like this. And I can't. I can't. I should have known I wasn't ready for this. When you walked out, it felt like I was breaking. No one should be able to make me feel like that. No one should have that power. It's not safe. And he says, I'm sorry. You can trust me. You can trust yourself. If you just give me time, I'm working on this. I can be better. And she says, you don't need to be better, Red.
No.
Not for me. Never. I should be better for you, for this. It's been perfect, but now it's over. Okay. It's not okay. He does leave, but boy, he does not.
Whoa, wait.
Finish it.
No, he says to himself, like, no, the decision I'm making is that I am not going to lose Chloe Brown. Mm-hmm. And then basically to himself, he whispers, I love you. Mm-hmm. And then gets up and leaves. And she's thinking, like, I would have thought that the I love you is like his last ditch effort to get me back. But if I hadn't been plastered to the door trying to listen to like any of the last sounds I could hear from him, I wouldn't have heard him tell me that he loves me. And she's like, that gives me a little bit of hope, but she's just trying to quash this hope down, 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 down. But then the next day, there is a package by her door. She sees a flyer that he's leaving as superintendent. That's something that he decided before they went camping, but she doesn't know that. So she's like, oh, great. Well, then fuck him, especially now.
Yeah.
And so, but then she goes back to her flat and outside the door is a package that says button on it. And there's this beautiful journal with an entry inside in his handwriting, but she can't bring herself to read it. Mm-hmm. And there's like chocolate in there.
Mm-hmm. And a little trinket jar, like just a bunch of things that showed he listened when she talked about the things that she really enjoys. And yeah. She's conflicted. So she does go to Gigi for advice.
Well, yeah, because sorry, this keeps on happening. Every day there's like a new thing outside. Mm-hmm. And yeah. But she can't bring herself to read this goddamn letter from him. So mm-hmm. Yeah, she goes to Gigi.
So she's asking Gigi basically, like, when you love somebody and they don't have to love you back, how do you, and like they could hurt you, you could hurt each other, it's a whole thing. How do you know it's real?
And Gigi's, no, how do you know it's, and then Gigi goes, real? Mm-hmm. And she says, actually, no, I know it's real. I never even thought to ask that. How do you know it's safe?
Then she also specifically says, how do you know it's safe and how do you know it's worth the risk?
Yes.
And Gigi says, you've asked me two very different questions in one go, Chloe, and I hope you don't think that they're the same. Love is not safe, but it's definitely worth it. And then she tells a story about her past, right? About her
first love.
Mm-hmm. And how it was worth it. She got her beautiful children out of it and all those things. But ultimately, it's not like
he was not worth it.
Exactly.
Like, he wasn't worth a damn. Mm-hmm. But then Chloe says something about, you know, my life is just pain or something like that.
She says, I suppose I've fallen in love with him and he loves me, too. But we hurt each other. And now I feel trapped in this endless hesitation because, well, what if we keep doing it? What if we keep making messes? I've always felt like I'm the kind of person who hurts too much. No, Gigi corrected calmly. You are a woman who, in a life filled with pain, came here to ask about love.
Yes, that line hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she decides to go home and read this letter from him.
Uh-huh.
So basically, he says that while he is leaving, that was a decision that he made before they even went camping. So it's not that he's leaving her. It's that his relationship with her has given him this boost of confidence that's going to allow him to move on, hopefully, with her.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I left your door that day and I decided that I am not a person who only breaks things. I'm a person who fixes things. And so I wrote myself a list to get you back.
I took a leaf out of your book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He says, one, lure her in with presents and candy.
Two, wait outside Annie's house, Nick Smudge. Three, learn how to use the PlayStation. Because she plays
just
video
so
games.
Random. Yeah, 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 yeah. And then it's like, four, paint in front of my window.
Shirtless.
Without a shirt on.
Maybe naked.
Totally naked. Yeah.
Might traumatize residents / get arrested, but I think she'd like it. Five, take charge of all buttons so she can wear real cardigans if she wants to.
Yeah, all of her clothes, they have buttons on them, but they don't actually latch. They're,
yeah.
What are those called? They're just like show buttons. I'm wearing a cardigan with show buttons on them right now, but that's not what they're called. Imitation buttons? No.
There's a word for it. It's fine.
There is a word for it. Doesn't matter.
So he has a couple of other things on the list, but the most important thing is at the very end, well, second to last, it says continue therapy, which is
yes
important. But also at the very end, it says 8, love her always, no matter what. And then he says, I already started on some of these things, and I'm hoping that eventually I'll get you back if I finish up this list. So whenever you're up for it, or there's something that really needs to be on this list that isn't on this list, or you right. just have a burning desire to tell me what a dick I am, feel free. Call me, come over, just open your curtains and give me the bird. Please.
I miss you.
And he says, we can do this. If you don't trust me on that, trust yourself. Because you must know you can do anything you set your mind to.
Redford Morgan.
Oh, and then she says to herself, I can fucking do this. And she looks out that window at him where he's painting, and he sees it because, again, it is nighttime. And they are lit up from behind.
Because earlier, when right before that finger bang, he told her that if you can see someone through a window at nighttime, there's a pretty good chance they can see you, too.
Mm-hmm. And so he sees her, and he's, like, looking at her across the distance, and then he sees her disappear from the window, and it's like...
in a swish of pink and white skirts.
And oh, no. Not a whole lot going on, and then all of a sudden, knock, knock on his door, and he opens
and he goes
that
racing
door.
Through the flat. And she walks in and immediately just hands him a notebook and says, read this. And it's her list, and it says it crosses out meaningless sex, and then he sees that the actual entry is keep red. And she's like, I read your letter today, and I thought it was pretty nice. And he's like, oh my God, she just read the letter today? Like, wait, is that a good sign or a bad sign? Or like, what's happening right now? And then finally he's like, Chloe, please put me out of my misery. And she says, okay. And takes 2 steps toward him, puts her arms around his neck, and kisses the dickens out of him.
And they're together forever, listener.
Yeah. And then the epilogue is a while later, they're living together. Annie gave them a smudge as a housewarming present.
And they're going to, like, the Museum of Modern Art.
They're in New York now.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
He's, like, stopping her before entering the doors, and he's like, all right, I'm going to try to find an uncovered piece of skin to kiss, because she's just like, it's winter in New York, and she's all bundled. And then he's like, all right, what is your pain level like? And she's like, ooh, red, your girlfriend is high. And he's like, yeah, that's exactly how we like it. It's just the fucking best. It's the
wonderful.
Best.
No, no.
This book is so wonderful.
It's so good.
And, like, I don't know how it's possible, but I remember liking book 2 even more than I like this book. And
I don't
that in this moment,
anything
that
about
feels
book 2.
Fucking impossible. But oh, man, book 2 has such wonderful anxiety rep. The hero has pretty severe anxiety, and she is just this witchy fucking professor.
Danny Brown is so fantastic.
PhD student.
I remember the third book is
it's fake dating.
Small town innkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I
yeah,
do
because
remember
she wants
that.
To own a bakery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, listener. It was fantastic. Cannot highly recommend this harder.
No, for
go
sure.
Go read it.
But everybody knows that I'm a Talia Hibbert fangirl to the max and the end and
yes.
the dearth.
10,000%.
And yeah. So, you know, this shouldn't be super surprising.
I'm going to end up rereading
so
this
good.
Whole series now. I'm glad that you
so
you
good.
Took those books out. So
yeah,
anyway.
You got them on Libby. Mm-hmm. Get stoked.
Hell yeah.
All right, Sabrina, what's your lady love?
My lady love is... I have not crafted in a while. It has been a hot minute Ooh. Since I sat down and crafted, to the point where I decided yesterday out of nowhere that I was going to cross stitch. I was like, I miss cross stitching. And I looked around for all my stuff. It's been so long since I crafted, I could not find my supplies. And I finally got it all out. And my lady love is a little thing called Pattern Keeper. It is a program on Android devices only. And if you are a cross stitcher and you use digital patterns, I cannot recommend it enough, to the point where go buy a fucking $30 Android tablet so that you can download Pattern Keeper.
Okay.
You can import your programs and all that stuff. And it's fantastic. I don't go find a YouTube video or something, but like I was able to just pick up where I left off. Once I had found everything and I had set up my little crafting spot, I picked up like I had never left it.
Awesome.
It was just really wonderful. And I didn't do it for a long time. I just kind of hung out and listened to an audiobook for like an hour and cross-stitched for a little bit. But it was just Pattern Keeper. My lady love is Pattern Keeper.
Awesome.
What's your lady love, Mel?
My lady love, we have finally, and this, you know, is hard for me to say in a really exuberant way, but there are definitely some benefits. We finally hit our cold snap. I mean, I felt like Halloween was in, I don't know, early September. It's been really warm up here for much longer than it normally is. So we finally hit our cold snap. And my lady love is a little thing called Hot Pot, because it finally got cold. And so we invited our friends Hector and Justine over, and we just all sat around the table eating Hot Pot and, you know, dicking around. And the kids were being ridiculous and, like, you know, showing off for people that they only see intermittently.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful. It's Hot Pot season now, y'all.
Hot pot season.
It is Christmas cactus season, which really, really goes right along with hot pot season most of the time. Hooey! I'm stoked about it. So, yeah, that's my lady love.
All right, listener. Keep being a badass and love yourself as much as you love helping a cat out of a tree that is fully capable of getting out of that tree on your own, getting played like
that's
a violin.
Oh, yeah. Just being a sucker for a cat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Heaving Bosoms. We'll be back next week with The Governess and the Orc by Finley Fenn. So pack your ponchos. Heaving Bosoms is produced by us, Melody Carlisle and Sabrina Bradley. Editing is done by me, Melody Carlisle. Our theme music is by the incredible singer-songwriter Brittany Fonts, and our art is by the ultra-talented author Kate Pryor. If you like our show, remember to follow us on your favorite podcast app, rate us 5 stars, and leave a review. That one small action is a huge way to help the show. If you want to get in touch with us for advertising inquiries or anything else, you can email us at heavingbosomspodcast@gmail.com. If you want more of us, visit patreon.com/heavingbosomspodcast. You can also find us on Instagram at heavingbosoms, on TikTok at heaving_bosoms, and in our Facebook group, the Heaving Bosoms Geriatric Friendship Cult. See you next week.